This is the Orange Podcast, conversations with Orange City Council for the local community.
This is Alan Reader, and in a week where we really knew winter had arrived, you're warming up by gathering around the fresh ideas of the Orange Podcast. This week, we'll chat to one more of our fresh batch of newly elected councillors, a pharmacist who was left so unimpressed with the way a DA was handled, she decided to run for council.
We had a development application to expand our pharmacy a few years ago, and it was just the most excruciating process. It nearly drove me insane. So it was that prompted me to look at council. And then when I looked, I thought, yeah, it probably could be a bit different to what it is.
More from Councillor Frances Kinghorn later in the show. But first up today, a quick wrap of key decisions at this week's council meeting. You're listening to the Orange Podcast. It was another big agenda at the Orange City Council meeting on Tuesday this week to find out some more CEO Dave Waddell. Dave, amongst the major projects decided on the weekend, another milestone at the meeting, $8.8 million for the earthworks at the sports precinct site.
That's right, Alan. It's council awarded the tender to a company, and that is a significant stage. That we'll see now that the trees have gone, or the trees that are going have gone. We'll see civil works, which will culminate next winter in eight multi. I think they call them
multi-purpose
fields.
You can play cricket, you can play rugby league, you can play soccer.
Exactly, and then so the team will now move on to the athletics precinct, which is a stadium and athletics fields, and they'll finish the design process, and on they go with that aspect of it, and then the final aspect would be the stadium itself. So it's good. It's another milestone.
It's good to see progress. People have been driving past there in the last while and have watched the trees be removed. They've been wood taken away for wood chipping, so the timber gets used for something. In the next little while, it's if you look at that block, it's a sloping block going from Forrestra through to Huntley, and these earthworks will start to level that out and put it on some and levels that you can build things on.
And they will, and drainage was a huge part of that as well. So lots of pipes underground and, as you say, lots of bulldozers. So, onward. It's good.
One of the aspects affecting every big project around town at present is the cost blowouts. That'll be something that this project will have to address in due course.
Statewide cost blowouts, 25 to 40%.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's coming. We'll see that we don't have enough money at some stage. We don't know how much yet. Things go up, things go down. Cross your fingers.
But in the meantime, we've staged that project and we're approaching other tiers of government to see what they can do.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The council is also looking at fishing in Sumer Park Dam. We have fishing in Gosling Creek and Lake Knobblers. Why don't we have fishing in Sumer Park?
Okay, so there's an argument here. Well, there's a battle. Battle between a school of thought that says whatever you do, don't touch the primary water catchment. Protect that water. Otherwise, you know, it could be poisoned or it could be compromised. And the other one that says, look, it's a public resource. We're an inland city. It's a beautiful place. Mm-hmm. Allow people in there in a limited way. The ex-councillor Neil Jones actually was a strong proponent of allowing access to Sumer. In fact, I think there's a standing resolution of council to buy access land down to the shore. Councillor Peterson put the motion up to investigate Sumer. It was amended to include more fishing at Spring Creek and Gosling and anywhere else. So going on top of the Councillor Romano's previous motion about more fishing and stocking, it's starting to become a thing. So we'll get back to council with a good solid report with all the facts and figures, and they'll make a decision.
For a water supply dam in a rural area, we can't be too precious about it. There are probably some cattle upstream.
Oh, there's cattle upstream and Lucknow's upstream. So, you know, you can battle that issue a lot, but it is the only water supply we've got. So you've got to be somewhat careful as well.
The other side of the coin, we have some limited fishing facility resources at Gosling Creek and Lake Knobblers. We can make those better rather than trying to diversify those resources across three dams.
Exactly. And that's exactly what the amendment brought to the motion.
So when a councillor comes up with an idea, how does that rationally sort it through for them to come back and make a good decision? A report will come back to council?
A report will come back, and one side will talk about water quality and engineering and costs of improved treatment in case things go wrong. And the other side will talk about benefits, social benefits to the community, maybe tourism benefits, who knows?
And our elected officials will make that tough decision.
Absolutely. I'm a fisherman, so I'll just keep out of it.
Another item on the agenda this week, It's interesting when a developer puts forward and has approved for a subdivision. Many years ago, back in 2007, that happened out on Borrowdale Lane. And as part of that, the council put a condition on it to leave a tree in place. Big picture, why does the council want to leave a tree there?
Oh, I mean, simple. Colour City, beautiful. It was a pin oak, 120 years old or something.
Yeah.
Of course we want to keep it. Subsequently, it's died.
Yep.
And council deferred the DA in the end because the DA said, look, let them take it down.
Let's go back a step. Since 2007, the developer's now come back saying the tree's died.
Yes.
There's also already a consent condition there to say, I can't knock that tree down.
Correct.
It's now dead. Is the approach that the developer has to ask permission for the tree to be removed?
Oh, absolutely. And that's what he was asking for. And the DA, the planners, said, well, if you are going to drop it, then you'll have to put two replacement trees in, significant trees, at significant cost. Council, however, deferred the matter because there was debate about, well, don't we want to know why the tree died? So we're just working through what the options are on that, whether we do some investigation on whether the tree died of some. I think Council Mileto was talking, worried that there might have been some disease issues.
That could spread to other trees in other parts of town. Right, so an independent scientist that will come in and give us some answers?
Possibly.
Okay.
Possibly.
Yep.
We've got to work through the options and then put it back to Council.
Yep. That'll come back. Also, the Council was providing some grants to local organisations, $4,000 for the Wangaratta Charity Golf Challenge and $1,200, I'm going to have to read this, for the Yu-Gi-Oh! Regional Qualifiers.
Right, it was a gaming comp.
Well, you have all sorts of events in Orange, and why does the council get behind the Yu-Gi-Oh! Challenge?
Oh, well, council tags a certain amount of money each year, and there are criteria. So if I'm talking to you and you've got a club or something and you've got a function coming up or you need money, there's money there.
Yeah.
There's not oodles of money, but there's enough and there's criteria. If you can meet those criteria that you're bringing people to town or, you know, helping with economic development, certainly not for profit helps, then council's they're very willing to help people.
And it's seed money. You might get help in your first year and that might help it get off the ground, build a reputation and save no money the second year. But if someone's, in a club that wants to get something off the ground, that idea that they reckon would bring 1,000 people to town, they should ask.
Absolutely. Ask us. Sporting clubs, they get lots of money from council.
A big agenda at Orange City Council this week. Dave Waddell, thanks for your time today.
Thanks, Alan. Stay warm.
You're listening to the Orange Podcast. We've been working our way through a whole bunch of new councillors in recent weeks, finding out what makes them tick, why they stood for council and where they might go from here. This next cab off the rank, Councillor Frances Kinghorn. Councillor, thanks for joining us today. Introduce yourself. Who are you?
I'm a local pharmacist. I've lived in Orange for 36 years and, grew up in Newcastle, went to uni in Sydney and then came here and still here.
What prompted a local pharmacist, business person, to stand for council?
The initial, it's not something I've ever been interested in. In fact, once upon a time I would have thought there was nothing more boring. But we had a development application to expand our pharmacy a few years ago and it was just the most excruciating process. It nearly drove me insane. So it was that prompted me to look at council. And then when I looked, I thought, it probably could be a bit different to what it is. So there I am now. Part of me thinks, God, what on earth were you thinking? But here I am.
That sounds like someone who's fairly constructive about it. It's rather than having a bad experience and staying clear of that horrible organisation, an opportunity to make it better.
I think that's valid, It's rather than just sniping from the sidelines, and there's certainly plenty of that, you can't really do that and not be prepared to stand up and do something yourself.
Hmm. What was your response to getting elected?
I was a little bit surprised because I think I was probably one of the last three, to get through. And to be honest, at that time, things had gone crazy in the community pharmacy world with vaccinating people against COVID, and it was really busy. And I thought, again, God, what have I done? Anyway, it's all right. It's working out okay.
How do you manage that as a local business person? It takes lots of time to be on council. How do you manage that as a way forward?
I think, don't they say, if you want something done, get a busy person to do it? So I don't know how. Maybe one day I'll look back and think, God, how did you do that? But anyway, now I just do, I don't think.
Lots of the new councillors came with some priorities, things they were particularly interested in doing. Do you have some of those?
I guess because of my initial motivation to look at council, then effective communication with the people of Orange was probably the main one, because I thought that probably could be done better. And that's because that's what I do in my job. I can't do my job well unless I can communicate effectively with people. So that was part of it. But health's got to be a big priority for me, and housing, affordable housing is a big thing as well, and clearly is for the people of Orange as well. And I know that's hard because it's primarily deemed to be a state government issue rather than a local one. But if we've got local people struggling with anything, then it is actually a local council issue, or it should be if it isn't.
Mm. You've been on council now for a few months. Are you beginning to pick up the tools for how you might deliver some of those changes?
Slightly, yeah. There's a lot to learn and a lot of reading to do, and lots of stuff. But yeah, getting there. Not too overwhelmed now.
Okay. Things like let's talk about some of them. Affordable housing, like you said, it's an area that the state government perhaps has more, and the federal government have big picture controls over. Are you interested in some of the local planning controls that might be adopted here that could make that something Orange City Council can have a hand in trying to fix?
I think that would be great. I mean, we have got some plans in place anyway to try and, you know, release a bit more land and do that sort of stuff, but they're all longer term stuff. And I know it's not it's a complicated issue and it's not a quick fix. But the other thing I'd really like to do, and I have spoken to Phil Donato and to Andrew G about this, about just trying to get together and work together and just forget the politics and just actually try and do something rather than just forget all the words and actually let's get something done.
You're saying that in the middle of an election campaign. Is it too optimistic, or have people got their own agendas, or do you think something can be done?
I think, well, both of them have said they're happy to try and get together and do something, and I don't know if that's because it's an election campaign. I don't know. I think genuinely they probably also both want what's best for the people of Orange. So if we can harness that. I just generally with any level of government, if you could get somebody who just did what they thought was right, and if that meant working with the opposition or that, they would get so much respect. I don't understand why people can't see that, because the your average person would think, great, their focus is me, not themselves. So anyway, we'll see what happens.
The incidents that you talked about right at the start, when you talked about a difficult experience with council, how can better communication, how could have better communication have made that an easier process or a better process?
Well, it was with us, it was planning, and I have heard from a lot of other people, especially when I did start going down this path, that they've had similar issues. But since I've been here, I've had, you know, some discussions with Mark Hodges, the planning director, about it. And he's happy to take it on board. They just obviously didn't realise it. For them, it's just their job and that's it. But for most people, if they're putting in a planning application, it's a big deal in their lives. And if it drags on and on without any support or even any acknowledgement that it's taking a long time or that there's an issue, then a simple thing like saying, you can't do that, but you can do this, or I'm sorry it's taking so long, it's the New South Wales Government planning law, something people do understand. They're happy to accommodate it as long as it's acknowledged.
Mm. Is it better communication? Is it more regular opportunities for communication? Is it?
I think ultimately, if the staff were able to contact people who'd had especially a more sort of convoluted process, to contact them from time to time and say, this is where we're up to. Mm. We haven't forgotten about you. Mm. That would ultimately save more time, because then you haven't got cranky people ringing up eventually saying, what are you doing? It's been months. You know, it would just be nicer. And the phone calls that they got would be more positive as well, because they might feel a little bit like you were part of the team. And, and I think that's how it should be.
Yeah, sometimes those sorts of that communication is based on, you know, the worst possible case scenario. It went wrong some other time, so now we're going to close up the doors and treat everyone that way.
Yeah, well, I guess, I mean, they must dread some of the phone calls, but the phone calls are the way they are because of the way the things are managed. But as I said, Mark was very, very happy to consider options and talk to the staff, and so that was good. I was really happy about that.
You've had your first round of meetings. Is everyone getting on? Have you had any tough decisions to make yet?
I think everyone gets on okay. People obviously disagree on things, and that's fine. I just respect that. I just know that with what I'm doing, I have to do it. For me, integrity is really important, and I've got to do what I think is right. And if that doesn't fit in with what everybody else thinks, well, too bad.
An example of one of those differences of opinion came up recently with a debate about superannuation. Do you think councillors were put in a difficult position with having to take a stand on superannuation or otherwise, or is it an appropriate thing for councillors to decide about?
Oh, it was incredibly awkward for people, especially the ones who were planning to vote in favour of it. It was really hard for them because, you know, they're essentially saying, you know, give me more, and that's not something that they should be able to do. There are lots of times that you have to declare a conflict of interest, which Councillor Milito did do for that, even though there was some written instruction suggesting that actually it was okay for us to do it. But theoretically, it wasn't okay. Mm. Yeah. It's a terrible idea. But
You took a particular stand on that superannuation issue. What did you make of the opposing points of view?
I took that decision because I believe that was the right thing to do, but I do respect the fact that the people who took a different decision also thought it was the right thing to do, so I'm not going to criticise anybody else for taking that decision.
How does the council deal with things that where it's been given the rough end of the pineapple by the state government? Is there a way around that, or do you just have to work with it, I wonder?
I guess you just have to work with it or try and convince them that they're perhaps not quite as intelligent as they think they are. Ultimately, you have to work together, and I think the idea of just blaming another level of government is not a good one because the problem's still there and we just have to find a different, more imaginative way to deal with it.
Okay. It sounds like you're still optimistic, a few months into the job, optimistic of achieving some of your goals.
I hope so. I'd be a bit worried if I'd lost all that energy already. I'm hopeful that we can do something, and I think there is a lot of energy. I actually really like this new council. I think there is a lot of energy and a lot of positivity, and I think it's good. I love the diversity, and I know diversity is a word that's often used just as a box-ticking exercise, but I just think some of the benefits of that diversity with the different life experiences and the different ages and the different sort of social backgrounds, that sort of stuff, different types of employment, it's really good. And it does actually show in some of the discussions that we have.
Hmm. Part of that diversity, I can't remember the last time Orange City Council had a pharmacist on board, maybe Pete Smith 1,000 years
ago.
Pete was. Stereotypically, a pharmacist is someone that has to solve problems, deal with customers, is part of the business community. That's a good insight for the council to be hearing about.
Well, they're those skills, I guess, aren't they? And plus, in community pharmacy, you're dealing with the public every day, which is a benefit, I guess, in a way, being a councillor in, because people can come and see me in the pharmacy if they want to, and they can talk to me about something
else.
Are
they doing that already?
Yeah. Oh, they were doing it even before I got elected, once I stood, but that's okay.
Francis Kinghorn, thanks for your time today.
No worries.
And that's the show for this week. But before we go, a quick mention that in this coming week, we'll pass an interesting centenary from one of the many colourful characters from Orange's past. Here's the story of George Finch in a nutshell. Born in the late 1800s, George Finch grew up in Orange, running around on his parents' property on the foothills of Mount Canobbles. He went on to become one of the world's top mountain climbers, and a pioneer of new techniques such as using oxygen at high altitudes, a radical step that saw him cop all sorts of flak from traditional climbers. Finch pressed on, and the major milestone came on the 27th of May 1922, 100 years ago on Friday this week. He was part of an expedition to climb Mount Everest. Finch and another climber set a new altitude record, climbing higher than anyone before him. He was so far ahead of his time that no one did any better for another 30 years, when Edmund Hillary climbed Mount Everest in 1953. As well as pioneering the use of oxygen for climbers, Finch, who went on to become a university professor in applied chemistry, developed the idea of climbers using lightweight fabric stuffed with down feathers to keep warm. He's now known as the inventor of the puffer jacket. George Finch, remembered in Orange this week. And that's the podcast for this week. Remember, you can download this program anytime from the Orange City Council website or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you won't miss a thing. This is Alan Reader. Until next time, bye for now.